Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT News Special number 401 with Jeff Jarvis and Micah Sargent, recorded Monday, March 18th, 2024, NVIDIA GTC Keynote 2024. Hello and welcome to our special TWiT News. This is the NVIDIA GTC, that is GPU Technology Conference. This is the AI conference from NVIDIA that kicks off today. Or actually, I guess it kicked off yesterday. March 18th is the kind of official kickoff with the keynote. We will be watching the keynote today. I am Micah Sargent, and I am joined across the web by Jeff Jarvis, who's here to join us. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Micah. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. You know a thing.
Last time I saw you, you were getting headaches with a...
I was with the Vision Pro. Yes. Oh, that thing is long since returned to Apple. Very happy that it's there. You know, I even had a moment of like, am I going to miss it? I don't miss it at all. I really don't.
Not at all.
Yeah, it was a literal pain in the head. Not the neck, though, which is good, I guess. But we are currently watching the kind of it's almost akin to when they flash the lights at a theater, right? It's getting everybody settled in. So they're presenting this living art, as they call it, though we have no further details about it. It's just some sort of visualization on screen that Jeff and I have both called a wallpaper and a music visualizer.
But a screensaver.
And a screensaver, yeah. It's unclear to us what exactly the data is that's being used to create the sculpture, but there is an individual on stage who sort of longingly and lovingly looks at the screen every now and then taps on their tablet to, one would assume, make changes to what's happening on screen, a sort of AI visualization DJ, if you will, which is going on my business cards.
Beats prompter.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But outside of that, I am not sure really what it is. But we are looking forward to seeing what NVIDIA has to announce on stage today as they talk about AI advances because, frankly, NVIDIA's hardware is kind of at the root of a lot of the generative AI pushes, yeah? So it should be interesting to see.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is that I'm trying to think of an analogy. NVIDIA makes the hardware. It's rather as if Samsung wanted to make a Hollywood presentation, or Kodak wanted to make a Hollywood presentation. Like we're the hardware behind this creativity, but we're not in the fun part.
Right.
We're the really rich part. They're making tons of money on all this stuff, but I think they want to try to claim a piece. For that, the other thing that interests me is that Jensen Huang, the CEO, said, I think 2 weeks ago at a discussion, that universities should stop training computer scientists.
What?
Switch to domain expertise. That's what's going to be needed. The machine, the quote here is, everybody in the world is now a programmer. This is the miracle of artificial intelligence. So it'll be really interesting, I think, to hear where he talks strategically.
Okay, that's fascinating because that could really upset some people.
Our show is about to begin.
All right, sounds like we're about to kick off with the NVIDIA GTC conference keynote, March 18th in the San Jose Convention Center. Looks like we'll be starting with a moving...
For those of you listening, it's just a black screen right now.
Yeah, so. Probably starting with You're a moving film. Don't worry. Do not adjust your dials. Space. The final frontier.
I am a visionary. Illuminating galaxies to witness the birth of stars. And sharpening our understanding of extreme weather events.
Yeah,
it looks like they're showing some of the ways that NVIDIA technology has been used in different...
I am a helper.
Science applications.
Guiding the blind through a crowded world.
A large contraption that helps people move or ambulate while having low or no vision.
Do not make me laugh.
I am a transformer. Harnessing gravity to store renewable power.
My friend Bill Gross has a company that does just that, moving concrete to store electricity.
Paving the way towards unlimited clean energy for us all.
Now I just want to know about that. How does that work?
If you clean it up, that'd be good.
That's cool.
I am a trainer.
Oh, dear. Sorry. For those listening, there's a robot on the screen that is doing someone's physical therapy. And that's not frightening at all.
And help save lives. I am a healer. Providing a new generation of cures.
Protein structures, which is the most impressive thing that AI has done to date.
Absolutely.
Penicillin. Is it still okay to take the medications?
Definitely. These antibiotics don't contain penicillin.
I don't know that we need...
Patient talking to a fake human being, AI. No, 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 no.
Generating virtual scenarios.
Practical applications is great, but when they get overboard in what they think they can do, that's where you get into danger.
Understand every decision.
Okay, showing self-driving.
I even helped write the script.
Oh, interesting.
So helped these, write the script. Didn't write it.
Yeah, helped write the script.
In muchos idiomas.
And also wrote the music. Original music
performed by human beings, however.
Yes, original music composed by AI and performed by the London Symphony Orchestra.
Wonder what they got paid for.
Yeah.
Deep learning.
I also wonder if they had to make any changes to the music.
Brilliant minds everywhere.
I am AI, says the AI.
No, we are.
Yes, we are AI.
Please welcome to the stage NVIDIA founder and CEO Jensen Huang.
All right, Jensen Huang takes the stage after showing where NVIDIA technology has been used in practical applications to kick off the keynote.
Large stage. Large audience, I should say.
Welcome to GTC. I hope you realize this is not a concert. You have arrived at a developers conference. There will be a lot of science described, algorithms, computer architecture, mathematics.
Uh-oh.
But we don't need any of that because the computers do it for us. That's what you said, Jensen.
Yeah, I gotta.
I sensed a very heavy weight in the room all of a sudden. Almost like you were in the wrong place. No conference in the world.
I don't know if we should start by insulting the audience.
Is there a greater assembly of researchers from such diverse fields of science, from climate tech
to radio
sciences, trying to figure out how to use AI to robotically control MIMOs for next generation 6G radios, robotic self-driving cars, even artificial intelligence. Even artificial intelligence.
That was a laugh line. You guys didn't laugh.
First, I noticed a sense of relief there all of a sudden. Also, this conference is represented by some amazing companies. This is not the attendees. These are the presenters.
It's a huge
and what's amazing is this.
Number of companies that are presenting.
You take Amazon, away Adobe, all of Foxconn, my friends,
close
now
friends,
Walter Reed,
Oracle,
Michael Dell is sitting right there,
Pixar,
in the IT industry,
Dell,
all of the friends
Meta,
I grew up with
Mozilla,
in the industry, If you take away list, this is what's amazing. These are the presenters of the non-IT industries using accelerated computing to solve problems
PayPal,
computers
can't. Snapchat, interesting.
Siemens, Lowe's, GE.
Represented in life sciences, healthcare, genomics, transportation, of course, retail, logistics, manufacturing, industrial.
Banking.
The gamut of industries represented is truly amazing. And you're not here to attend only, you're here to present, to talk about your research.
I am? Oh,
$100 trillion dollars of the world's industries is represented in this room today. This is absolutely amazing.
I hope AI doesn't destroy us today.
Not today, Jeff.
Goes the stock
there
market.
There is absolutely something happening. There is something going on.
Indeed.
The industry is being transformed, not just ours. Because the computer is the single most important instrument of society today, fundamental transformations in computing affects every industry. But how did we start? How did we get here? I made a little cartoon for you. Literally, I drew this. In one page, this is NVIDIA's journey. Started in 1993. This might be the rest of the talk.
It's sort of an illustration of different strange graphs.
We were founded in 1993. There are several important events that happened along the way. I'll just highlight a few. In 2006, CUDA, which has turned out to have been a revolutionary computing model, we thought it was revolutionary then. It was going to be an overnight success, and almost 20 years later it happened. We saw it coming. 2 decades later. In 2012, AlexNet, AI and CUDA made first contact.
Which stands for Compute Unified Device Architecture.
In 2016, recognizing the importance of this computing model, we invented a brand new type of computer. We call it DGX-1. 170 teraflops in this supercomputer. 8 GPUs connected together for the very first time. I hand-delivered the very first DGX-1 to a startup located in San Francisco called OpenAI.
I want to know how they shifted from graphics to changing
DGX-1
the world.
DGX-1 was the world's first AI supercomputer. Remember, 170 teraflops. 2017, the Transformer arrived. 2022, ChatGPT captured the world's imaginations.
Thank you,
Google,
for the
people realize the importance and the capabilities of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I was going to say, just slid right over that, but yes.
Generative AI emerged, and a new industry begins. Why? Why is a new industry? Because the software never existed before. We are now producing software, using computers to write software, producing software that never existed before. It is a brand new category. It took share from nothing. It's a brand new category. And the way you produce this software is unlike anything we've ever done before. In data centers,
this is kind of giving business seminar.
Generating tokens, producing floating point numbers at very large scale. As if in the beginning of this last industrial revolution, when people realized that you would set up factories, apply energy to it, and this invisible, valuable thing called electricity came out, AC generators. And 100 years later, 200 years later, we are now creating new types of electrons, tokens, using infrastructure we call factories, AI factories.
Sorry, new types of electrons?
This new, incredibly valuable thing called...
Is this the extended conceit that's going on here?
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to talk about many things
back
about this new industry.
Edison and
we're
Tesla.
We're going to talk about how we're going to do computing
the real
next.
Tesla. Yeah.
We're going to talk about the type of software that you build because of this new industry, the new software, how you would think about this new software. What about applications in this new industry? And then maybe what's next? And how can we start preparing today for what is about to come next? Well, but before I start, I want to show you the soul of NVIDIA, the soul of our company, at the intersection of computer graphics, physics, and artificial intelligence, all intersecting inside a computer, in Omniverse, in a virtual world simulation. Everything Omniverse? We're going to show you today, Omniverse. Literally everything we're going to show you today,
sounds like a
is a simulation, everything. Not animation. It's only beautiful because it's physics. The world is beautiful. It's only amazing because it's being animated with robotics.
I am honestly having a little trouble following this thread. He's kind of bouncing all over the place.
All day is completely generated, completely simulated in Omniverse, and all of it. What you're about to enjoy is the world's first concert where everything is homemade.
What? Okay, so in NVIDIA Omniverse is some sort of generative AI
everything
space?
Everything is homemade.
Yeah, I think he's just trying to one-up Zuckerberg.
Home videos.
And Apple.
So sit back and enjoy yourself.
Okay, so here we go with a demo. Adobe Substance 3D Painter, Blender, and Maxon ZBrush.
A charming cabin. Now a overdone Greek statue, now a watch in fine detail. Looks like an ad for one.
Mm-hmm. Now close-ups of the chips and architecture.
Now code. Now animation editor. Robots! Made up, though.
Yeah, lots of simulations, physics simulations, and 3D modeling.
Fire!
I have to say, that fire looks more real than I see in a lot of things. So each of these
analysis.
And each of these videos that they're showing includes a little bit of text about what tools are being used to produce them. Some fabric, again, code coming together with robotics, 3D printing, robotic arms, and Amazon Robotics for doing shipping.
It's basically NVIDIA inside.
There you go. Yes.
We're in all of it. Now a warehouse. Hello, Amazon.
Build a sim-ready warehouse. Yeah, prompt to create a warehouse with issues, which is good. It's got some simulations
going. Falling. At least they didn't fall on a fake human being.
building the next mega ship to get stuck in the canal.
Now humans talking, almost human-like.
Oh my! Just showing
the factory is going mad.
Yeah, the factory just absolutely falls apart in every way. How they handle that, it seems. Driving, self-driving.
It doesn't matter because it's only in the Omniverse.
Exactly. It's all handmade or homemade. I mean, that's what the word they used. A simulation of Earth called Earth 2. Okay, that's where I sign off. No, thank you. This is getting into 42 territory.
Accelerated computing has reached the tipping point.
That's another new
phrase.
General
purpose computing has run out of steam. We need another way of doing computing so that we can continue to scale, so that we can continue to drive down the cost of computing, so that we can continue to consume more and more computing while being sustainable.
Accelerated computing compute is
a dramatic speed up over general purpose computing. And in every single industry we engage, and I'll show you many, the impact is dramatic. But in no industry is it more important than our own. The industry of using simulation tools to create products. In this industry, it is not about driving down the cost of computing. It's about driving up the scale of computing.
Yeah. They're worried that Moore's law is starting to fail.
The entire
and
product
we won't be able to keep making things smaller and smaller.
In full fidelity, completely
so we've
got
to figure out a new way to bring up computing.
Essentially what we call digital twins.
I mean, compute.
We would like to design it, build it, simulate it, operate it completely digitally.
Bop it. Twist it.
In order to do that, we need to accelerate an entire industry. And today, I would like to announce that we have some partners who are joining us in this journey to accelerate their entire ecosystem so that we can bring the world into accelerated computing.
It's making me feel like Andreessen.
Mm-hmm. When you become accelerated, your infrastructure...
Oh, brother, when you become accelerated, when you take this pill...
And when that happens, it's exactly the same infrastructure for generative AI. And so I'm just delighted to announce several very important partnerships. There are some of the most important companies in the world. Ansys does engineering simulation for what the world makes. We're partnering with them to CUDA accelerate the Ansys ecosystem.
CUDA
to accelerate. Connect Ansys to the Omniverse digital twin. Incredible.
This is interesting because really Microsoft had this concept of digital twins before NVIDIA was doing it. And it was more for, it was also for simulation reasons.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
We'll have a giant installed base to go serve. End users will have amazing applications. And of course, system makers and CSPs will have great customer demand. Synopsys. Synopsys is NVIDIA's literally first software partner. They were there in the very first day of our company. Synopsys revolutionized the chip industry with high-level design. We are going to CUDA accelerate Synopsys. We're accelerating computational lithography, one of the most important applications that nobody's ever known about. In order to make chips, we have to push lithography to the limit. NVIDIA has created a library, a domain-specific library, that accelerates computational lithography.
As a Gutenberg geek, I like that lithography is a printing technology, has a role.
All of TSMC,
yeah, that is pretty cool.
Who is announcing today that they're going to go into production with NVIDIA cuLitho. Once it's software-defined and accelerated,
there are a lot of terms
the next step
he's throwing
is
around.
To apply generative AI to the future of semiconductor manufacturing, pushing geometry even further.
Cool.
Cadence builds the world's essential EDA and SDA tools.
Go back to that screen that had actual information on it.
Between these two companies, Synopsys and Cadence, we basically build NVIDIA. Together, we are CUDA accelerating Cadence. They're also building a supercomputer out of NVIDIA GPUs so that their customers could do fluid dynamic simulation at 100, 1,000 times scale. Basically, a wind tunnel in real time. Cadence Millennium, a supercomputer with NVIDIA GPUs inside. A software company building supercomputers. I love seeing that. Building Cadence co-pilots together. Imagine a day when Cadence could, Synopsys, Ansys, tool providers, would offer you AI co-pilots so that we have thousands and thousands of co-pilot assistants helping us design chips, design systems.
Interesting choice to use that same word that Microsoft is using for its branding across everything.
As you can see the trend here, we're accelerating the world's CAE, EDA, and SDA so that we could create our future in digital twins. And we're going to connect them all to Omniverse, the fundamental operating system for future digital twins.
I would love to know what any of this actually
means.
One
of the industries
what
that
does this look like in practice?
Scale. And you know, you all know this one very well, large language models. Basically, after the transformer was invented, we were able scale large language models at incredible rates, effectively doubling every 6 months. Now, how is it possible that by doubling every 6 months, that we have grown the industry, we have grown the computational requirements so far? And the reason for that is quite simply this. If you double the size of the model, you double the size of your brain, you need twice as much information to go fill it. And so every time you double your parameter count, you also have to appropriately increase your training.
It's not like a shelf
count
to fill. Right.
The combination of those two numbers becomes the computation scale you have to support. The latest, the state-of-the-art OpenAI model is approximately 1.8 trillion parameters. 1.8 trillion parameters required several trillion tokens to go train. So a few trillion parameters on the order of, a few trillion tokens on the order of, when you multiply the two of them together, approximately 30, 40, 50 billion, quadrillion floating point operations.
Here's the math that he promised.
Now we just have to do some CO math right now. Just hang with me. So you have 30 billion quadrillion. A quadrillion is like a peta. And so if you had a petaflop GPU, you would need 30 billion seconds to go compute, to go train that model. 30 billion seconds is approximately 1,000 years.
Oh, my God.
Well, 1,000 years, it's worth it. I'd like to do it sooner, but it's worth it. Which is usually my answer when most
people... This is why the Stochastic Parents paper says the mistake is making ever bigger models. It's this kind of macho size matters talk. What's the task?
And so 1,000 years, 1,000 years. So what we need are bigger GPUs.
Of course you do. You make them.
Exactly. What can we do to solve this problem?
And we realize
make us more money, of course.
That the answer is to put a whole bunch of GPUs together. And of course, innovate a whole bunch of things along the way, like inventing tensor cores, advancing NVLink so that we could create essentially virtually giant GPUs, and connecting them all together with amazing networks from a company called Mellanox, InfiniBand, so that we could create these giant systems. And so DGX-1 was our first version, but it wasn't the last. We built supercomputers all along the way. In 2021, we had Selene, 4,500 GPUs or so. And then in 2023, we built one of the largest AI supercomputers in the world. It's just come online, EOS. And as we're building these things, we're trying to help the world build these things. And in order to help the world build these things, we got to build them first. We build the chips, the systems, the networking, all of the software necessary to do this. You should see these systems. Imagine writing a piece of software that runs across the entire system, distributing the computation across thousands of GPUs, but inside are thousands of smaller GPUs.
All millions sipping of so GPUs much power.
Distribute work across all of that.
GPUs all the way down.
Yeah, exactly.
So you get the most energy efficiency, the best computation time, keep your costs down. And so those fundamental innovations is what got us here. And here we are, as we see the miracle of ChatGPT emerge in front of us.
It'd be interesting to hear them say anything about the environment.
We have a long ways to go. We need even larger models. We're going to train it with multimodality data, not just text on the internet, but we're going to train it on text and images and graphs and charts. And just as we learn, watching TV. And so there's going to be a whole bunch of watching video so that these models can be grounded in physics, understands that an arm doesn't go through a wall.
So far, they're not doing a very good job of that.
These models would have common sense. A lot of the world's combined with a lot of the world's languages.
We drink hemlock when he says AGI.
Just as you and I do, when we try to learn, we might use our imagination to simulate how it's going to end up, just as I did when I was preparing for this keynote. I was simulating it all along the way.
Oh, so he's saying he's an AI.
I hope it's going to turn out as well as I had it in my head.
No, but that is an interesting thing to say, that me thinking about how something's going to go is the same way that an AI works. When
that another performer,
not really the case,
did her performance completely on a treadmill so that she could be in shape to deliver it with full energy.
What?
I didn't do that. If I get a little winded about 10 minutes into this, you know what happened. And so where were we? We're sitting here using synthetic data generation. We're going to use reinforcement learning. We're going to practice it in our mind. We're going to have AI working with AI, training each other, just like student and teacher debaters. All of that is going to increase the size of our model. It's going to increase the amount of data that we have, and we're going to have to build even bigger GPUs. Hopper is
ever
fantastic.
Bigger GPUs.
But we need bigger GPUs.
And somewhere, so, Timnit Gebru is screaming.
I would like to introduce you
to our bigger GPU.
To a very, very big GPU.
Yeah. Oh, let's clap for the thing that's going to... Never mind, I'll stop.
Named after David Blackwell. Mathematician. Game theorists. Probability. We thought it was a perfect name. Blackwell, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy this.
The largest chip physically possible. Let's join two of them together.
208 billion transistors.
Twice the size, a massive leap in compute.
Petaflops of AI performance.
Oh, my Lord. Let's put two of them side by side. 40 petaflops. Trillion parameter scale. 40 petaflops. Yeah. 80 petaflops.
No, 80 petaflops of AI performance.
Oh, and then they just keep going. They're dropping it into the actual machine. Infrastructure processor for the network. And then you get a bunch of them stacked.
Stack upon stacked.
18 compute trays.
I think we read faster than we do. We're not computers.
Yeah,
it's hard to get all this data.
Exactly.
72 Blackwell CPUs connected.
In one.
One rack.
1.4 exaflops of AI performance. Quantum InfiniBand switch, again for networking stuff. Oh, my God. For folks who are listening, they just keep making it bigger.
It just keeps bigger. People get weirded out by robots. That doesn't weird me out. This is weirding me out.
Yeah. It's this little... Oh, and then, of course, like cooling and energy efficiency.
We're going to talk more about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then you stack a bunch of them next to each other.
Oh, God. And they're going to be on Mars before you know it. Now it's like an infinite view of these huge machines. You see, that's not...
A full data center... has 645 exaflops of AI performance. I don't even know. I can't even conceptualize 645 exaflops.
No. Blackwell is not a chip. Blackwell is the name of a platform. People think we make GPUs.
You do.
And we do.
Okay.
But GPUs don't look the way they used to.
Well timed, sir.
If you will, the heart of the Blackwell system, and this inside the company is not called Blackwell, it's just the number. And this is Blackwell sitting next to, this is the most advanced GPU in the world in production today.
Close up.
This is Hopper. This is Hopper. Hopper changed the world.
Good name.
Yeah. I like
this is Blackwell.
It's bigger, just so everybody understands. It's bigger than Hopper.
And people are applauding a square inch.
Yeah, it's so funny. We see. Thank you.
You're very good.
Now he's being kind of condescending to Grace Hopper, and she's yesterday's
good
news.
Girl.
Oh, he did say good girl.
Ooh, did he say that?
208 billion transistors. And so you could see, I can see, there's a small line between two dies. This is the first time two dies have
your face
like
says
this
it all.
Together in such a way that the two dies think it's one chip. There's 10 terabytes of data between it.
Don't read the room. Read the world outside that room. Mm-hmm.
If you only simulated it in that digital twin, you would have known not to say that.
There's no memory locality issues, no cache issues. It's just one giant chip. And so when we were told that Blackwell's ambitions were beyond the limits of physics, the engineer said, so what?
I don't know, because that's reminiscent of what Apple does with Apple Silicon. And so this is the Blackwell two right next to each other that are interfacing, and it makes the computer think it's just one.
The first one is form-fit function compatible to Hopper.
Physics said it couldn't be done.
So you slide on Hopper, and you push in Blackwell. That's the reason why one of the challenges of ramping is going to be so efficient. There are installations of Hoppers all over the world, and they could be
okay. So they made this swappable with Hoppers.
The power,
so you can buy more Blackwells and more chips.
The software, identical, push it right back. And so this is a Hopper version for the current HGX configuration. And this is what the second Hopper looks like. This now, this is a prototype board. And Janine, can I just borrow
Hopper? That looks like it's,
ladies and gentlemen, Janine Paul on it.
Yeah.
And so this is a fully functioning board, and I'll just be careful here.
Yeah. They got to sell that to somebody.
This right here
that
is, I don't know, $10 billion.
It's got a face on it.
Yeah.
The second one's five. It gets cheaper after that, so any customers in the audience?
I don't understand these jokes. How much? What do you mean? It's $10 billion.
The first one,
but this one's quite expensive.
Oh,
this
is the RNG scale.
And the way it's going to go to production is like this one here, okay? And so you're going to take this. It has two Blackwell chips and four Blackwell dies connected to a Grace CPU. The Grace CPU has a super fast chip-to-chip link.
So Grace Hopper still gets to stay.
This computer is
the
first of its
kind. Yeah, she's just a servant to Blackwell now.
Where this much computation, first of all, fits into this small of a place. Second, it's memory coherent. They feel like they're just one big happy family working on one application together. And so everything is coherent within it. The amount of... You know, you saw the numbers.
Yeah, there's, I do wonder why they're placed at a diagonal to each other.
But yeah, I wonder too.
This is a miracle. This
has got to be a reason, surely.
Let's see. What are some of the things on here? There's NVLink on top, PCI Express on the bottom.
I'm going to get one of those for my personal computer. No big
deal.
Which
one is my and your left? One of them, it doesn't matter.
Need Lake Michigan to
one
cool
of them it. Is a CPU chip-to-chip link. It's my left or your, depending on which side.
Just keep going.
I was trying to sort that out, and I just kind of...
It's okay. Just keep going.
Doesn't matter. Hopefully it comes
He's kind
in,
of so. Occasionally awkward. It's kind of almost endearing.
It does wrap around to endearing. You're right.
Okay. So this is the Grace Blackwell system. But there's more.
He pulled something out of his pocket.
So it turns out...
All this in your phone.
All of the specs is fantastic, but we need a whole lot of new features. In order to push the limits beyond, if you will, the limits of physics, we would like to always get a lot more X factors. And so one of the things that we did was we invented another transformer engine, the second generation. It has the ability to dynamically and automatically rescale and recast numerical formats to a lower precision whenever it can. Remember, artificial intelligence is about probability. And so you kind of have, you know, 1.7, approximately 1.7 times approximately 1.4 to be approximately something else. Does that make sense? And so the ability for the mathematics to retain the precision and the range necessary in that particular stage of the pipeline, super important. And so it's not just about the fact that we designed a smaller ALU. The world's not quite that simple. You've got to figure out when you can use that across a computation that is thousands of GPUs. It's running for weeks and weeks on weeks, and you want to make sure that the training job is going to converge. And so this new transformer engine, we have a fifth generation NVLink. It's now twice as fast as Hopper, but very importantly, it has computation in the network. And the reason for that is because when you have so many different GPUs working together, we have to share our information with each other. We have to synchronize and update each other. And every so often, we have to reduce the partial products and then rebroadcast out the partial products, the sum of the partial products, back to everybody else. And so there's a lot of what is called all reduce and all to all and all gather.
None
it's
of
all
this
part
makes
of this
any sense to
area
me. Yeah, no.
of synchronization and collectives so that we can have GPUs working with each other. Having extraordinarily fast links and being able to do mathematics right in the network allows us to essentially amplify even further. So even though it's 1.8 terabytes per second, it's effectively higher than that. And so it's many times that of Hopper. The likelihood of a supercomputer running for weeks on end is approximately zero. And the reason for that is because there's so many components working at the same time. The statistic, the probability of them working continuously is very low. And so we
I'm
need
glad
to
he's not
sure
making Boeing jets.
Amen.
Checkpoint and restart as often
but
as
he is
can.
Making things inside them.
Yeah,
but
how to do them going forward. How to build them going forward.
A weak chip or a weak node early, we could retire it and maybe swap in another processor. That ability to keep the utilization of the supercomputer high, especially when you just spent $2 billion building it, is super important. And so we put in a RAS engine, a reliability engine, that does 100% self-test, in-system test, of every single gate, every single bit of memory on the Blackwell chip, and all the memory that's connected to it. It's almost as if we shipped with every single chip its own advanced tester that we test our chips with. This is the first time we're doing this. Super excited about it. Secure AI.
You're right. That board does look like a face.
Yeah.
It has two gold, for those of you listening, it has two golden
only
chips
this
atop.
Conference do they
and a multicolored nose. And then
the
a flat
sort of flat smiley face where the, yeah, or yeah. Yeah, I guess not smiley,
AI.
But yeah, face, mouth.
Obviously, you've just spent hundreds of millions of dollars creating a very important AI. And the code, the intelligence of that AI is encoded in the parameters. You want to make sure that on the one hand, you don't lose it. On the other hand, it doesn't get contaminated. And so we now have the ability to encrypt data, of course, at rest.
Okay, so these are purpose-built engines for creating AI.
All encrypted. And so we now have the ability to encrypt and transmission, and
not just running, but creating.
It is an entrusted, trusted environment, trusted engine environment. And the last thing is decompression. Moving data in and out of these nodes when the compute is so fast becomes really essential. And so we've put in a high line speed compression engine and effectively moves data 20 times faster in and out of these computers. These computers are so powerful and there's such a large investment, the last thing we want to do is have them be idle. And so all of these capabilities are intended to keep Blackwell fed and as busy as possible. Overall, compared to Hopper, it is two and a half times the FP8 performance for training per chip. It also has
these are
this
terms
new
for AI hardware
so
engineers, I guess.
Even though
I
the
know.
Computation yep. speed is the same, the bandwidth that's amplified because of the memory, the amount of parameters you can store in the memory is now amplified. FP4 effectively doubles the throughput. This is vitally important for inference. One of the things that is becoming very clear is that whenever you use a computer with AI on the other side, when you're chatting with the chatbot, when you're asking it to review or make an image, remember, in the back is a GPU generating tokens.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it inference. but it's more appropriately generation. The way that computing is done in the past was retrieval. You would grab your phone, you would touch something, some signals go off, basically an email goes off to some storage somewhere. There's pre-recorded content. Somebody wrote a story or somebody made an image or somebody recorded a video. That record pre-recorded content is then streamed back to the phone and recomposed in a way based on a recommender system to present the information to you. You know that in the future, the vast majority of that content will not be retrieved. And the reason for that is because that was pre-recorded by somebody who doesn't understand the context, which is the reason why we have to retrieve so much content.
Right. Podcast hosts and writers and store clerks.
Understands the context, who you are, for what reason you're fetching this information, and produces the information for you just the way you like it. The amount of energy
if
we
only
save,
knew what the F of fact was.
Yeah, and also save, I don't to suggest save, that it's always tremendous. Newly generated is kind of false by it because it's partial retrieval. You are retrieving information if you're asking.
It's modified retrieval, right?
The way we
right.
Yeah. It's molded. Is fundamentally different. We created
it's like
a
Burger
processor.
King. Have it your way. We already have the burger. You want mayo on that?
One of the most important parts of it. Is content
Blackwell brings the
generation.
Mayo. There's the new tagline.
This format is FP4. Well, that's a lot of computation. 5x the token generation, 5x the inference capability of Hopper seems like enough.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah.
But why stop there?
Call
the
today.
Is not enough, and I'm going to show you why. I'm going to show you why.
Is it math? It's probably math.
So we would like to have a bigger GPU, even bigger than this one.
Bigger than Blackwell?
And so we decided to scale it. And notice, but first, let me just tell you how we've scaled. Over the course of the last 8 years, we've increased computation by 1,000 times. 8 years, 1,000 times. Remember, back in the good old days of Moore's Law, it was 2x, well, 5x every 10x every 5 years. That's easiest math. 10x every 5 years, 100 times every 10 years, 100 times every 10 years in the heydays of the PC revolution. 100 times every 10 years. In the last 8 years, we've gone 1,000 times. We have 2 more years to go. And so that puts it in perspective.
So Moore and Hopper are both outdone and replaced.
The rate at which we're advancing computing is insane. And it's still not fast enough, so we built another chip. This chip...
the size of a dinner plate.
Just an incredible chip. We call it the NVLink Switch.
Oh, come on, not
it's
a good name.
Come on, give it a name.
It's almost the size of Hopper all by itself. This Switch chip has 4 NVLinks in it, each 1.8 terabytes per second. And it has computation in it, as I mentioned.
Sisters.
What is this chip for?
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah.
If we were to build such a chip, we can have every single GPU talk to every other GPU at full speed at the same time. That's insane. It doesn't even make sense. But if
it's
you could do that, if you can find a way to do that and build a system to do that, that's cost effective. Hmm. That's cost effective.
And good for the environment,
how
right?
How incredible would it be that we could have all these GPUs connect over a coherent link so that they effectively are one giant GPU? Well, one of the great inventions in order to make it cost effective is that this chip has to drive copper directly. The SerDes of this chip is just a phenomenal invention so that we could do direct drive to copper. And as a result, you can build a system that looks like this.
It looks like a black box. It's 720
Now this system,
1.44
is kind of insane.
Exaflops in inference.
This is one DGX. This is what a DGX looks like now. Remember, just 6 years ago, It was pretty heavy, but I was able to lift it.
Now I can't.
I delivered the first DGX-1 to OpenAI, and the researchers there. It's on, you know, the pictures are on the internet, and we all autographed it, and if you come to my office, it's autographed there. It's really beautiful, but you could lift it. This DGX, by the way, was 170 teraflops. If you're not familiar with the numbering system, that's 0.17 petaflops. So this is 720.
Wow. That's
the first one I delivered petaflops. To OpenAI was 0.17. You could round it up to 0.2. It won't make any difference. But and back then, it was like, wow, you know, 30 more teraflops. And so this is now 720 petaflops, almost an exaflop for training, and the world's first one exaflops machine in one rack.
That is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, there are only a couple, two, three exaflops machines on the planet as we speak. And so this is an exaflops AI system in one single rack. Well, let's take a look at the back of it. So this is what makes it possible.
That looks like my cable box.
That's the back, the DGX MV
Link. Oh, wow. They have these things coming up out of the floor. That's kind of cool.
130 terabytes per second goes through the back of that chassis. That is more than the aggregate bandwidth
of the internet. For those who like how people organize cables, it's a cool look at the cable organization on the back of the rack.
Feels kind of old-fashioned to still have cables.
So we could basically send everything to everybody within a second. And so we have 5,000 cables, 5,000 NVLink cables, in total 2 miles.
2 miles of cable.
Now, this is the amazing thing. If we had to use optics, we would have had to use transceivers and retimers, and those transceivers and retimers alone would have cost 20,000 watts. 2 kilowatts of just transceivers alone, just to drive the NVLink spine. As a result, we did it completely for free over NVLink switch, and we were able to save the 20 kilowatts for computation. This entire pack is.
So they're saying save it in total, but no, they're like, no, we put it towards the computation.
For the future.
It's liquid cooled. What goes in is 25 degrees C, about room temperature. What comes out is 45 degrees C, about your jacuzzi. So room temperature goes in, jacuzzi comes out, 2 liters per second.
So I can heat my jacuzzi with it? Is that what you're saying? Because that's not a bad idea.
We could sell a peripheral.
That's what I was, yeah.
Oh, you can heat San Francisco Bay with that.
600,000 parts. Somebody used to say, you know, you guys make GPUs, and we do. But this is what a GPU looks like to me. When somebody says GPU, I see this. 2 years ago, when I saw a GPU, it was the HGX. It was 70 pounds, 35,000 parts. Our GPUs now are 600,000 parts and 3,000 pounds. 3,000 pounds. 3,000 pounds, that's kind of like the weight of a, you know, carbon fiber Ferrari. I don't know if that's a useful metric, but...
Yeah, I don't go lifting.
Such a San Francisco metric.
I feel it. I feel it. I get it. I get that. Now that you mentioned that, I feel it. I don't know what's 3,000 pounds. Okay, so 3,000 pounds, ton and a half. So it's not quite an elephant. So this is what a DGX looks like. Now let's see what it looks like in operation. Okay, let's imagine. How do we put this to work, and what does that mean?
Two dairy cows worth of weight.
Now that's a metric we understand.
It took about you know 3 to 5 months or so.
How many Leos?
With 25,000.
No, I don't know his current weight, so
I'm not.
And it would consume 15 megawatts, 8,000 GPUs.
It does say it's 15 times the average mass of an adult male in America.
Oh, okay, there we go.
15 Leos.
15 Leos.
Groundbreaking AI model.
And this is a new metric.
It's obviously not as expensive as anybody would think, but it's 8,000 GPUs. It's still a lot of money. And so 8,000 GPUs, 15 megawatts, If you were to use Blackwell to do this, it would only take 2,000 GPUs. 2,000 GPUs, same 90 days, but this is the amazing part. Only 4 megawatts of power. So from 15, yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, that's good to see. A quarter of the power. Right. Okay.
But they're making it bigger and bigger and bigger, though.
And that's our goal. Our goal is to continuously drive down the cost and the energy. They're directly proportional to each other. Cost and energy with the computing so that we can continue to expand and scale up the computation that we have to do to train the next generation.
So models. We can keep using the same amount of power.
Ugh. Yeah.
Inference or generation is vitally important going forward. You know, probably some half of the time that NVIDIA GPUs are in the cloud these days, it's being used for token generation. You know, they're either doing Copilot this or ChatGPT that, or all these different models that are being used when you're interacting with it, or generating images, or generating videos, generating proteins, generating chemicals. There's a bunch of generation going on. All of that is in the category of computing we call inference. But inference is extremely hard for large language models because these large language models have several properties. One, they're very large. And so it doesn't fit on one GPU. This is, imagine Excel doesn't fit on one GPU, you know? And imagine some application you're running on a daily basis doesn't fit on one computer.
That's like my old
like
Osborne.
Doesn't fit on one computer.
I had to take the disk in and out.
In fact, do. And many times in the past,
WordStar would not fit in memory.
For many people,
and had to keep going back to the disk.
Now, all of a sudden, this one inference application where you're interacting
with a game called Crayola Rock.
That chatbot
I had to switch CDs.
Supercomputer in the back.
Yeah.
And that's the future. The future is generative with these chatbots, and these chatbots are trillions of tokens, trillions of parameters, and they have to generate tokens at interactive rates. Now, what does that mean? Oh, well, 3 tokens is about a word.
Three tokens per word.
Space, the final frontier. These are the adventures. That's like 80 tokens. Okay? I don't know if that's useful to you. And so...
how many Leos is that?
The art of communication.
I don't know if I can translate tokens to Leos. Analogy.
Yeah, this is not going well.
Oh.
My jokes are flopping.
I don't know what he's talking about.
My jokes are petaflopping.
And so here we are. Just we're trying to generate these tokens. When you're interacting with it, you're hoping that the tokens come back to you as quickly as possible and as quickly as you can read it. And so the ability for generation tokens is really important. You have to parallelize the work of this model across many, many GPUs so that you could achieve several things. One, on the one hand, you would like throughput, because that throughput reduces the cost, the overall cost per token of generating. So your throughput dictates the cost of delivering the service. On the other hand, you have another interactive rate, which is another tokens per second, where it's about per user. And that has everything to do with quality of service. And so these two things compete against each other. And we have to find a way to distribute work across all of these different GPUs.
When are we going to get to the NVIDIA watch?
Yeah. Where's the ring?
Where's the wearables?
You know, I told you there's going to be math involved.
Oh, I thought we already did that.
And everybody's going, oh, dear. I heard some gasp just now when I put up that slide.
It was me.
You know, so this right here, the y-axis is tokens per second, data center throughput. The x-axis is tokens per second, interactivity of the person. And notice the upper right is the best. You want interactivity to be very high, number of tokens per second per user. You want the tokens per second of per data center to be very high. The upper right is terrific. However, it's very hard to do that. And in order for us to search for the best answer across every single one of those intersections, x-y coordinates, okay, so you just look at every single x-y coordinate, all those blue dots came from some repartitioning of the software. Some optimizing solution has to go and figure out whether to use tensor parallel, expert parallel, pipeline parallel, or data parallel, and distribute this enormous model across all these different GPUs and sustain the performance that you need. This exploration space would be impossible if not for the programmability of NVIDIA's GPUs. And so we could, because of CUDA, because we have such rich ecosystem, we could explore this universe and find that green roofline. It turns out that green roofline, notice you got TP2, EPA, DP4. It means tensor parallel across two GPUs, parallels across eight, data parallel across four. Notice on the other end, you got tensor parallel across four and expert parallel across 16. The configuration, the distribution of that software, it's a different runtime that would produce these different results. And you have to go discover that roofline. Well, that's just one model. And this is just one configuration of a computer. Imagine all of the models being created around the world and all the different configurations of systems that are going to be available.
Okay.
So now that you understand the basics, let's take a look.
Thank you. I definitely understand.
That was the basics, Micah. Oh, the basics.
Now we're
going to grad school.
Okay.
This is the extraordinary thing. In one generation, because we created a system that's designed for trillion parameter generative AI, the inference capability of Blackwell is off the charts. And in fact, it is some 30 times Hopper. Yep.
You know,
I feel like that's all they needed to say. It's 30 times better. We didn't need to know all of the math and everything.
For large language models.
You know, I make fun of the doomsters talking about controlling compute. Like it,
the blue
when you hear a presentation like this, I start to at least understand
the bigger chip.
Fearful awe at the size of all this.
You know, greatest 10 terabytes per second. We connected the two chips together. We got this giant 208 billion parameter chip. How would we have performed if nothing else changed? And it turns out quite wonderfully, and that's the purple line, but not as great as it could be. And that's where the FP4 Tensor Core, the new transformer engine, and very importantly, the NVLink switch. And the reason for that is because all these GPUs have to share the results, partial products. Whenever they do all-to-all, all-gather, whenever they communicate with each other, that NVLink switch is communicating almost 10 times faster than what we could do in the past using the fastest networks. Okay, so Blackwell is going to be just an amazing system for generative AI. And in the future, data centers are going to be thought of, as I mentioned earlier, as an AI factory. An AI factory's goal in life is to generate revenues, generate, in this case, intelligence in this facility, not generating electricity as in AC generators, but of the last industrial revolution and this industrial revolution, the generation of intelligence. And so this ability is super, super important.
They're really pushing
the excitement
this idea that
of Blackwell
it's
is really
the industrial
the
revolution,
you know,
number
first,
two. What are your first, thoughts on that, Jeff? Do you feel that at all?
This is a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I guess 2 years ago when
no.
we first started to
No, okay.
To go to market.
We could talk about more, but yeah, I just...
You know, we had the benefit of
maybe we'll talk about it on Twig, because I'd love to hear
your
in-depth thoughts on whether you think it has any...
You presume much, sir.
We had two customers. We have more now.
Or this idea that you can manufacture intelligence, that's not sitting well. But that's the ego of this industry now.
Right. It's kind of the...
Unbelievable excitement.
What is that mandate? There's a historical...
Unbelievable excitement.
Mandate.
And there's a whole bunch of different configurations. Of course, I
Manifest Destiny?
Yes, Manifest Destiny. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Slide into the Hopper form factor, so that's easy.
I mean,
to
just
upgrade.
Say that I showed you the exactly. computer has intelligence, is itself anthropomorphic,
right?
Then to say that you could make more of it faster is egotistical, it's hubristic.
And by the way, for folks who are listening, wondering what's going on, why are you talking? All that's been said is that they had two customers a long time ago, and now they have many customers. That's literally all that's been said while Jeff and I were talking.
Trying to figure this out.
Geared up, all the OEMs and ODMs. Regional clouds, sovereign AIs, and telcos all over the world are signing up to launch with Blackwell. This Blackwell would be the most successful product launch in our history, and so I can't wait to see that. I want to thank some partners that are joining us in this. AWS is gearing up for Blackwell. They're going to build the first GPU with secure AI. They're building out a 222 exaflops system. You know, just now when we animated the digital twin, if you saw the all of those clusters are coming down. By the way, that is not just art. That is a digital twin of what we're building. That's how big it's going to be. Besides infrastructure, we're doing a lot of things together with AWS. We're CUDA accelerating SageMaker AI. We're CUDA accelerating Bedrock AI. Amazon Robotics is working with us using NVIDIA Omniverse and Isaac Sim. AWS Health has NVIDIA Health integrated into it. So AWS has really leaned into accelerated computing. Google is gearing up for Blackwell. GCP already has A100s, H100s, T4s, L4s, a whole fleet of NVIDIA CUDA GPUs, and they recently announced the Gemma model that runs across all of it. We're working to optimize and accelerate every aspect of GCP. We're accelerating Dataproc for data processing, their data processing engine, JAX, XLA, Vertex AI, and Mujoco for robotics. So we're working with Google and GCP across a whole bunch of initiatives. Oracle is gearing up for Blackwell. Oracle is a great partner of ours for NVIDIA DGX Cloud, and we're also working together to accelerate something that's really important to a lot of companies, Oracle Database. Microsoft is accelerating, and Microsoft is gearing up for Blackwell. Microsoft and NVIDIA has a wide-ranging partnership. We're accelerating, CUDA accelerating all kinds of services when you chat, obviously, and AI services that are in Microsoft Azure. It's very, very likely NVIDIA's in the back doing the inference and the token generation.
I mean, yeah, because it's OpenAI.
They built the largest NVIDIA InfiniBand supercomputer, basically a digital twin of ours or a physical twin of ours. We're bringing the NVIDIA ecosystem to Azure, NVIDIA DGX Cloud to Azure. NVIDIA Omniverse is now hosted in Azure. NVIDIA Healthcare is in Azure. And all of it is deeply integrated and deeply connected with Microsoft Fabric. The whole industry is gearing up for Blackwell. This is what I'm about to show you. Most of the scenes that you've seen so far of Blackwell are the full fidelity design of Blackwell. Everything in our company has a digital twin. And in fact, this digital twin idea is really spreading, and it helps companies build very complicated things perfectly the first time. And what could be more exciting than creating a digital twin to build a computer that was built in a digital twin? And so let me show you what Wistron is doing.
Thank you. I need to see some example of what this means and how that
is helpful. To meet the demand for NVIDIA accelerated computing, Wistron, one of our leading manufacturing partners, is building digital twins of NVIDIA DGX and HGX factories using custom software developed with Omniverse SDKs and APIs. For their newest factory, Wistron started with a digital twin to virtually integrate their multi-CAD and process simulation data into a unified view. Testing and optimizing layouts in this physically accurate digital environment increased worker efficiency by 51%. During construction, the Omniverse digital twin was used to verify that the physical build matched the digital plans. Identifying any discrepancies early has helped avoid costly change orders. And the results have been impressive.
Using a digital twin will bring Wistron's factory online in half the time,
just 2.5 months instead of five.
Mike is getting an epithetic headache.
I am indeed.
The Omniverse digital twin helps Wistron rapidly
this,
test new
so
layouts
by creating
to accommodate
a digital
new
twin,
or improve
it's going to
existing space
empower Karens
and
everywhere.
Real-time operations
no,
using
I'm kidding.
Live
I just imagine you start to build a digital twin, and then you go in as a person who has no construction knowledge, and you tell the person who does have construction knowledge that they're doing it wrong.
With NVIDIA AI,
that's kind of troubling.
NVIDIA's global ecosystem of partners.
I understand
a new era of
why they're doing this, and,
AI
you know, but it's
digitalization.
It's a little bit. I don't know. You just have to see. So there's a factory that was built after
that's
the creation of a digital twin.
That's the way it's going to be in the future. We're going to manufacture everything digitally first, and then we'll manufacture it physically.
It's like taking the Sims and making it into a business platform. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
What was it that you saw that caused you to put it all in on this incredible idea? And it's this.
Sorry, what?
Hang on a second.
Oh, okay.
Guys, that was going to be such a moment.
Oh,
another punchline.
That's
teraflops.
What happens when you don't rehearse.
That's what happens when you don't rehearse, he said. Oh, no rehearsal?
This, as you know, was First Contact. 2012, AlexNet.
Okay, how do you feel about him using that term, First Contact?
Computer,
as if it's a new life form.
Cat. And we said, oh,
First Contact with AI.
It's going to change everything.
Via computer vision.
You take 1 million numbers. You take 1 million numbers across three channels, RGB. These numbers make no sense to anybody. You put it into this software, and it dimensionally reduces it. It reduces it from a million dimensions. It turns it into three letters, one vector, one number. And it's generalized. You could have the cat be different cats. And you could have it be the front of the cat and the back of the cat. And you look at this thing, you say, unbelievable. You mean any cats? Yeah, any cat. And it was able to recognize all these cats. And we realized how it did it. Systematically, structurally, it's scalable. How big can you make it? Well, how big do you want to make it? And so we imagine that this is a completely new way of writing software. And now today, as you know, you type in the word C-A-T, and what comes out is a cat. It went the other way. Am I right? Unbelievable. How is it possible? That's right. How is it possible you took three letters and you generated a million pixels from it, and it made sense? Well, that's the miracle.
It had five
and here we are.
Legs, but other than
just
that.
Literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Ten years later, where we recognize text, we recognize images, we recognize videos and sounds.
So Google, not only it says learn and understand
them,
everything.
We understand their meaning.
Google organized everything. They want to learn and understand it.
Yeah, in 2017,
it understands the
Transformer model.
It understood, not just recognizes the English, it understood the English. It doesn't just recognize the pixels, it understood the pixels. And you can
understand
the
brainwaves and amino acids and protein.
You can have language condition image and generate all kinds of interesting things. Well, if you can understand these things, what else can you understand that you've digitized? The reason why we started with text and, you know, images is because we digitized those. But what else have we digitized? Well, it turns out we digitized a lot of things. Proteins and genes and brain waves. Anything you can digitize, so long as there's structure, we can probably learn some patterns from it. And if we can learn the patterns from it, we can understand its meaning. If we can understand its meaning, we might be able to generate it as well. And so, therefore, the generative AI revolution is here. Well, what else can we generate?
Pattern
what else can we learn?
To meaning
well,
to generation.
One of the things that we would love to learn climate. We would love to learn extreme weather.
Before we ruin it.
We would love to learn how we can predict future weather at regional scales,
Earth
at sufficiently
too.
High resolution, such that we can keep people out of harm's way before harm comes. Extreme weather cost the world $150 billion. Surely more than that, it's not evenly distributed. $150 billion is concentrated in some parts of the world, and of course, to some people of the world. We need to adapt, and we need to know what's coming. And so we're creating Earth 2.
Or better,
a digital twin of the Earth for predicting weather. And we've made
exactly.
an extraordinary invention called CoreDiff, the ability to use generative AI to predict weather at extremely high resolution.
It will say, the way that you stop climate change from happening is by stopping the company NVIDIA from continuing to create larger and larger GPUs, which is why, which is why they have not asked it that question.
That would be a great novel.
It
you
would
build the most powerful, brilliant machine, and it tells you you're the problem.
Yes.
I like that.
Important details. NVIDIA's Cordiff is a revolutionary new generative AI model trained on high-resolution, radar-assimilated WRF weather forecasts and ERA 5 reanalysis data.
I have no sense of how much
extreme events like
NVIDIA does models, 25 whether that competes with their customers.
With 1,000 times the
speed that's a good question.
3,000 times the energy efficiency
don't know what the business relationship
of conventional
is there.
Weather models. By combining the speed and accuracy of NVIDIA's weather forecasting model ForecastNet and generative AI models like Cordiff, we can explore hundreds or even thousands of kilometer-scale regional weather forecasts to provide a clear picture of the best, worst, and most likely impacts of a storm. This wealth of information can help minimize loss of life and property damage. Today, Cordiff is optimized for Taiwan, but soon, generative supersampling will be available as part of the NVIDIA Earth 2 inference service for many regions across the globe.
I wonder if this is an AI voice.
That accent is unusually British. Motto.
The weather company has to trust the source of global weather prediction. We are working together to accelerate their weather simulation. First principled base of simulation. However, they're also going to integrate Earth to Cordiff so that they could help businesses and countries do regional high resolution weather prediction. And so if you have some weather prediction you'd like to know, like to do, reach out to the weather company. Really exciting work. NVIDIA Healthcare, something we started 15 years ago. We're super, super excited about this. This is an area where we're very, very proud.
I'm honestly genuinely excited about this aspect as well.
Whether it's medical imaging or gene sequencing or computational chemistry, it is very likely that NVIDIA is the computation behind
it. It's not just diagnostic
health. We've done so much work in this area. Today we're announcing
personalized treatment.
That we're going to do
something because
really,
the
really
long history of healthcare research and study,
AI models that are being used,
like white people have the advantage of having had that amount of research done for them,
and
now those people of color have had such a short amount. So to be able to accelerate that part of it and give us the same, I think, is a really cool idea.
Is now.
Agreed.
Pass through machine learning so that we understand the language of life.
I gave a talk
the
at a
to understand the language
pharma
of life,
company
of course,
some years ago in Switzerland.
First evidence of it.
And as I listened to all of them talk, it's all about finding a molecule.
Really quite an
it's all about drugs as a molecule.
It's a single molecule.
Single molecule. That's what the whole business is a molecule.
And reconstructed.
Just amazed me. When you think about it, yes, of course it is. Right?
X-ray crystallography.
But finding the molecule, finding out what it will do, predicting it, testing it.
200,000 of them in just, less than a year or so? AlphaFold has reconstructed 200 million proteins. Basically, every
this
protein,
is the most impressive
every, every living
AI
thing that's
absolutely
ever been sequenced. This is completely revolutionary. Well, those models are incredibly hard to use, incredibly hard for people to build. And so what we're going to do is we're going to build them. We're going to build them for the researchers around the world. And it won't be the only one. There'll be many other models that we create. And so let me show you what we're going to do with it.
Virtual screening for new medicines is a computationally intractable problem. Existing techniques can only scan billions of compounds and require days on thousands of standard compute nodes to identify new drug candidates. NVIDIA BioNeMo NIMS enable a new generative screening paradigm. Using NIMS for protein structure prediction with AlphaFold, molecule generation with MolMIM, and docking with DiffDock, we can now generate and screen candidate molecules in a matter of minutes.
There it is, the molecule.
MolMIM can connect to custom applications to steer the generative process, iteratively optimizing for desired properties. These applications can be defined with BioNeMo microservices or built from scratch. Here, a physics-based simulation optimizes for a molecule's ability to bind to a target protein while optimizing for other favorable molecular properties in parallel. MolMIM generates high-quality drug-like molecules that bind to the target and are synthesizable, translating to a higher probability of developing successful medicines faster.
Wow.
BioNeMo is enabling a new paradigm in drug discovery with NIMS,
just
providing on-demand microservices
individualized
that
medicine
can be combined to build powerful drug discovery workflows
that's
like de novo protein design
answering
or guided molecule generation
mental health
virtual
like
screening.
The yeah just BioNeMo, it's so incredible.
NIMS are helping researchers and developers reinvent
a lot of human testing
design.
Needed
yes
a lot of steps between here and there
absolutely
but maybe cutting out some steps of human
NVIDIA
testing, too,
Momim,
if you find out what doesn't work.
Exactly.
Momim, Core Diff, there's a whole bunch of other models. Computer vision models, robotics models, and even, of course, some really, really terrific open source language models. These models are groundbreaking. However, it's hard for companies to use. How would you use it? How would you bring it into your company and integrate it into your workflow? How would you package it up and run it? Remember, earlier I just said that inference is an extraordinary computation problem. How would you do the optimization for each and every one of these models and put together the computing stack necessary to run that supercomputer so that you can run these models in your company? And so we have a great idea. We're going to invent a new way for you to receive and operate software. This software comes basically in a digital box. We call it a container. And we call it the NVIDIA Inference Microservice, a NIM. And let me explain to you what it is. A NIM, it's a pre-trained model, so it's pretty clever. And it is packaged and optimized to run across NVIDIA's install base, which is very, very large. What's inside it is incredible. You have all these pre-trained, state-of-the-art open-source models. They could be open-source. They could be from one of our partners. It could be created by us, like NVIDIA Momim. It is packaged up with all of its dependencies. So
inference
CUDA,
as a service.
The right version. cuDNN, the right version. TensorRT, LLM, distributing across the multiple GPUs. Triton Inference Server, all completely packaged together. It's optimized depending on whether you have a single GPU, multi-GPU, or multi-node of GPUs. It's optimized for that. And it's connected up with APIs that are simple to use. Now this, think about what an AI API is. An AI API is an interface that you just talk to. And so this is a piece of software in the future that has a really simple API. And that API is called Human. And these packages, incredible bodies of software, will be optimized and packaged.
This is why he said you can stop training computer science.
And you can download it, you could take it with you, you could run it in any cloud, you could run it in your own data center, you can run in workstations if it fit, and all you have to do is come to ai.nvidia.com. We call it NVIDIA Inference Microservice, but inside the company, we all call it NIMS. Okay? Just imagine, you know, someday there's going to be one of these chatbots, and these chatbots is going to just be in a NIM. And you'll assemble a
it's
whole
in your watch. Got there.
And that's
yay!
The
there it is.
Built
or a little pin that
how
you put on your shirt.
Yes.
It is unlikely that you'll write it from scratch or write a whole bunch of Python code or anything like that. It is very likely that you assemble a team of AIs. There's probably going to be a super AI that you use that takes the mission that you give it and breaks it down into an execution plan. Some of that execution plan
AI.
Could be handed off to another
this,
NIM.
This idea of agent
that
tree
maybe,
is the next step that AI
SAP.
People see, but it doesn't come until we trust it.
The language of SAP mm-hmm. is
we're
ABAC.
Not going to give it.
It might understand ServiceNow.
Important tasks. We shouldn't give it important tasks like driving a car and killing people.
Right.
It might then
unless we fully
that
trust it. Or making, even making an airplane reservation or deciding what medicine to give.
And this agent tree is an opportunity to pull away from the larger systems. Is that the idea there, where each agent is
small? No, it's greater service.
Ah, okay.
So you think about the first stage of AI was computational comparison and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The next stage is generational. It'll make stuff. The next stage is agentic.
Because it's been presented with
but it'll do stuff
right
for you.
Got it.
Look like. It knows what answer.
But you got to trust it.
Right answer.
I don't trust it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even trust it to order a meal for me, right?
Like, no. Yeah. You know, top of the hour, that has something to do with a build plan or some forecast or some customer alert or some bugs database or whatever it happens to be. And we could assemble it using all these NIMs. And because these NIMs have been packaged up and ready to work on your systems, so long as you have NVIDIA GPUs in your data center or in the cloud, this NIMs will work together as a team and do amazing things. And so we decided, this is such a great idea, we're going to go do that. And so NVIDIA has NIMs running all over the company. We have chatbots being created all over the place, and one of the most important chatbots, of course, is a chip designer chatbot. You might.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say the lunch chatbot.
I was hoping so too.
And so we want something to build a little bit more chatbots,
relatable
AI co-pilots that are co-designers with our engineers. And so this is the way we did it. So we got ourselves a Llama 2. This is a 70B, and it's packaged up in a NIM. And we asked it, what is a CTL? Well, it turns out CTL is an internal program, and it has an internal proprietary language, but it thought the CTL was a combinatorial timing logic, and so it describes, conventional knowledge of CTL. But that's not very useful to us.
Llama 2, by the way, from Meta.
And so we gave it a whole bunch of new examples. This is no different than onboarding an employee. We say, thanks for that answer. It's completely wrong. and then we present to them.
So you say, I appreciate your enthusiasm, even if you're inaccurate.
This is what the CTL is at NVIDIA. And the CTL, as you can see, CTL stands for Compute Trace Library, which makes sense. We're tracing compute cycles all the time, and it wrote the program. Isn't that amazing?
Yay, training works. We know that.
And so the productivity of our chip designers can go up. This is what you can do with a NIM. First thing you can do with it is customize it. We have a service called Nemo Microservice that helps you curate the data, preparing the data so that you could teach this, onboard this AI. You fine-tune them, and then you guardrail it. You can even evaluate the answer, evaluate its performance.
Guardrail it as a verb.
Other examples. And so that's called the Nemo Microservice. Now, the thing that's emerging here is this. There are three pillars of what we're doing. The first pillar is, of course, inventing the technology for AI models and running AI models and packaging it up for you. The second is to create tools to help you modify it. First is having the AI technology. Second is to help you modify it. And third is infrastructure for you to fine-tune it and, if you like, deploy it. You could deploy it on our infrastructure called DGX Cloud, or you can deploy it on-prem, you can deploy it anywhere you like. Once you develop it, it's yours to take anywhere. And so we are effectively an AI foundry. We will do for you and the industry on AI what TSMC does for us building chips. And so we go to TSMC with our big ideas, they manufacture it, and we take it with us. And so exactly the same thing here, AI foundry, and the three pillars are the NIMS.
Back to Gutenberg.
Nemo Microservice.
Type was made by
Foundries. The other thing that you could teach the NIM to do is to understand your proprietary information. Remember, inside our company, the vast majority of our data is not in the cloud. It's inside our company. It's been sitting there, being used all the time, and gosh, it's basically NVIDIA's intelligence. We would like to take that data, learn its meaning, like we learned the meaning of almost anything else that we just talked about. Learn its meaning, and then re-index that knowledge into a new type of database called a vector database. And so you essentially take structured data or unstructured data, you learn its meaning, you encode its meaning, so now this becomes an AI database, and that AI database, in the future, once you create it, you can talk to it. And so let me give you an example of what you could do. So suppose you've got a whole bunch of multi-modality data, and one good example of that is PDF. So you take the PDF, you take all of your PDFs, all your favorite, the stuff that
damned is PDFs is
proprietary to you, critical to your company. You can encode
those
it.
Damned PDFs.
Just as we encode the pixels of a cat, and it becomes the word cat, we can encode all of your PDF, and it turns into.
If you didn't make it into a PDF in the first place, you'd still have the data.
That is very true.
Proprietary information of your company. And once you have that proprietary information, you can chat to it.
So it looks like NVIDIA is kind of trying to show, look, we can do the things that OpenAI and all the others are doing.
Our customers do. You know, this, is, well, this is what's weird about this to me.
It's very strange.
Our software team, you know, they just chat with the bugs database.
Because Adobe already has that functionality in Adobe Acrobat. I was just chatting with my PDF the other day.
Right.
It's not a euphemism.
Damn you, PDF, you said.
So we have another chatbot.
It's a classic business-to-business versus business-to-consumer problem. I've seen this in the media business all the time.
You can do it.
If you're a B2B, you can't compete with your Cs.
Right.
By going after your B's Cs.
Okay, so we call this Nemo Retriever, and the reason for that is because ultimately its job is to go retrieve information as quickly as possible. And you just talk to it. Hey, retrieve me this information. It goes, it brings it back to you. Is it, do you mean this? You go, yeah, perfect. Okay? And so we call it the Nemo Retriever. Well, the Nemo service helps you create all these things, and we have all these different NIMs. We even have NIMs of digital humans.
I'm Rachel, your AI care manager.
No.
So it's a really short clip, but there were so many videos to show you, I guess, so many other demos to show you, and so...
Yeah, he really did not do a rehearsal before this.
But this is Diana.
No,
she is a digital human NIM, and... you just talked to her, and she's connected, in this case, to Hippocratic AI's large language model for healthcare. And it's truly amazing. She is just super smart about healthcare things.
I will believe it when I see it.
After my VP of software engineering, talks to the chatbot for Bugs database, then you can come over here and talk to Diane. And so Diane is completely animated with AI. And she's a digital human.
When I would go to the Hippocratic AI website, it requires a password to even access the website.
The enterprise IT industry is sitting on a gold mine. It's a gold mine because they have so much understanding of the way work is done. They have all these amazing tools that have been created over the years, and they're sitting on a lot of data. If they could take that gold mine and turn them into co-pilots, these co-pilots could help us do things. And so just about every IT franchise, IT platform in the world that has valuable tools that people use is sitting on a goldmine for co-pilots. And they would like to build their own co-pilots and their own chatbots. And so we're announcing that NVIDIA AI Foundry is working with some of the world's great companies. SAP generates 87% of the world's global commerce. Basically, the world runs on SAP. We run on SAP. NVIDIA and SAP are building SAP Joule co-pilots using NVIDIA Nemo and DGX Cloud. ServiceNow, they run 85% of the world's Fortune 500 companies run their people and customer service operations on ServiceNow. And they're using NVIDIA AI Foundry to build ServiceNow Assist virtual assistants.
Every other keynote
cohesive
brings on people from
the
company.
Data.
He's going on an hour and a half now, solidly, just
data,
himself.
Over 10,000 companies. NVIDIA AI Foundry is working with them, helping them build their Gaia generative AI agent. Snowflake is a company that stores the world's digital warehouse in the cloud and serves over 3 billion queries a day for 10,000 enterprise customers. Snowflake is working with NVIDIA AI Foundry to build co-pilots with NVIDIA Nemo and NIMS. NetApp. Nearly half of the files in the world are stored on-prem on NetApp. NVIDIA AI Foundry is helping them build chatbots and co-pilots like those vector databases and retrievers with NVIDIA Nemo and NIMS. And we have a great partnership with Dell. Everybody who is building these chatbots and generative AI, when you're ready to run it, you're going to need an AI factory. And nobody is better at building end-to-end systems of very large scale for the enterprise than Dell. And so anybody, any company, every company will need to build AI factories. And it turns out that Michael is here. He's happy to take your order.
Oh, wow.
There's Michael Dell in the lip section of
the audience
in front. Ladies
and gentlemen, Michael Dell.
Hello, it's me, Michael Dell. Hello.
Let's talk about the next wave of robotics, the next wave of AI, robotics, physical AI. So far, all of the AI that we've talked about is one computer. Data comes into one computer, lots of the world's, if you will, experience in digital text form. The AI imitates us by reading a lot of the language to predict the next words. It's imitating you by studying all of the patterns and all the other previous examples. Of course, it has to understand context and so on and so forth. But once it understands the context, it's essentially imitating you. We take all of the data, we put it into a system like DGX, we compress it into a large language model. Trillions and trillions of parameters become billions and billions. Trillions of tokens becomes billions of parameters. These billions of parameters becomes your AI. Well, in order for us to go to the next wave of AI, where the AI understands the physical world, we're going to need three computers. The first computer is still the same computer. It's that AI computer that now it's going to be watching video, and maybe it's doing synthetic data generation, and maybe there's a lot of human examples, just as we have human examples in text form, we're going to have human examples in articulation form, and the AIs will watch us, understand what is happening, and try to adapt it for themselves into the context. And because it can generalize with these foundation models, maybe these robots can also perform in the physical world fairly generally. So I just described in very simple terms essentially what just happened in large language models, except the ChatGPT moment for robotics may be right around the corner.
You just went from AGI.
And so we've been building the end-to-end systems for robotics for some time.
The robotic servant that could do anything.
We have the AI system, DGX.
Yeah.
We have the lower system, which is called AGX for autonomous systems.
AGX.
The world's first robotics processor. When we first built this thing, people are, what are you guys building? It's an SoC. It's one chip.
System
it's designed
on a chip.
To be very low power, but it's designed for high-speed sensor processing and AI. And so if you want to run transformers in a car, or you want to run transformers in a you know, anything that moves, we have the perfect computer for you. It's called the Jetson. And so the DGX on top for training the AI, the Jetson is the autonomous processor.
Yeah.
And in the middle, we need another computer. Whereas large language models have the benefit of you providing your examples and then doing reinforcement learning human feedback. What is the reinforcement learning human feedback of a robot? Well, it's reinforcement learning physical feedback. That's how you align the robot. That's how the robot knows that as it's learning these articulation capabilities and manipulation capabilities, it's going to adapt properly into the laws of physics. And so we need a simulation engine that represents the world digitally for the robot so that the robot has a gym to go learn how to be a robot. We call that virtual world Omniverse.
There we go. There's
Omniverse. And the computer that runs Omniverse is called OVX. And OVX, the computer itself, is hosted in the Azure cloud.
Oh, Microsoft, okay? Azure
cloud. So basically, we built these three things.
No wonder they can say co-pilot so
often. On top of it, we have algorithms for every single
one. Deep integration with Microsoft.
Now, I'm going to show you one super example of how AI and Omniverse are going to work together. The example I'm going to show you is kind of insane, but it's going to be very, very close to tomorrow. It's a robotics building. This robotics building is called a warehouse. Inside the robotics building are going to be some autonomous systems. Some of the autonomous systems are going to be called humans, and some of the autonomous systems are going to be called forklifts. And these autonomous systems are going to interact with each other, of course, autonomously, and it's going to be overlooked upon by this warehouse to keep everybody out of harm's way. The warehouse is essentially an air traffic controller. And whenever it sees something happening, it will redirect traffic and give new waypoints, just new waypoints to the robots and the people, and they'll know exactly what to do. This warehouse, this building, you can also talk to. Of course you could talk to it. Hey, you know, SAP Center, how are you feeling today? For example. And so you could ask the warehouse the same questions. Basically, the system I just described will have Omniverse Cloud that's hosting the virtual simulation, and AI running on DGX Cloud, and all of this is running in real time. Let's take a look.
All right.
The future of heavy industries starts as a digital twin. The AI agents helping robots, workers, and infrastructure navigate unpredictable events in complex industrial spaces will be built and evaluated first in sophisticated digital twins.
This makes me wonder if this is part of what Microsoft is doing, because they are called Azure Digital Twins.
As a simulation environment that integrates digital workers, AMRs.
And he just said that it's hosted in Azure, so maybe NVIDIA does the other part of the digital twin.
Of the entire warehouse from 100 simulated
ceiling mounted
cameras.
As you pointed out earlier on the show, it's simply a strategy.
And AMR route planning with NVIDIA cuOpt. Software in loop testing of AI agents in this physically accurate simulated environment enables us to evaluate and refine how the system adapts to real-world unpredictability.
And learn how to replace humans.
Here, an incident occurs along this AMR's planned route, blocking its path as it moves to pick up a pallet. NVIDIA Metropolis updates and sends a real-time occupancy map to cuOpt, where a new optimal route is calculated. The AMR is enabled to see around corners and improve its mission efficiency. With generative AI-powered Metropolis Vision Foundation models, operators can even ask questions using natural language. The visual model understands nuanced activity and can offer immediate insights to improve operations. All of the sensor data is created in simulation and passed to the real-time AI, running as NVIDIA Inference Microservices, or NIMS. And when the AI is ready to be deployed in the physical twin, the real warehouse, we connect Metropolis and Isaac NIMS to real sensors with the ability for continuous improvement.
Got it. So instead of simulating in real life boxes falling, you can do all of the unsafe stuff in the digital twin. And then it, in theory, will learn from that and bring it into real world. That's pretty cool.
A future facility, warehouse, factory, building will be software-defined.
Simulate an earthquake.
The software is running.
Kind of a thing.
How else would you test the software? So you test the software, the building, the warehouse.
The humans become what? Directed by the AI? This becomes, you know, we got to think about quality of work.
Exactly. Quality of work and, frankly, quality of life for the humans who are being told what to do by an AI.
For robotic systems is with digital twins.
Or you hope it's the opposite, that the humans are the master.
Exactly.
We're going to create basically omniverse.
I know master is not the best wording.
Apologies. More simple API and a channel, and you can connect your application to it. So this is going to be as wonderfully, beautifully simple in the future that Omniverse is going to be. And with these APIs, you're going to have these magical digital twin capability. We also have turned Omniverse into an AI and integrated it with the ability to chat USD. The language of our language is, you know, human, and Omniverse's language, as it turns out, is Universal Scene Description.
Oh, USDZ.
So
that's
that
good.
That language
that's
is
a common
rather complex, and so we've taught our Omniverse
form.
That language. And so you can speak to it
I
in English, and it would directly generate USD. And it would talk back in USD, but converse back to you in English. You could also look for information in this world semantically. Instead of the world being encoded semantically in language, now it's encoded semantically in scenes. And so you could ask it of certain objects or certain conditions or certain scenarios, and it can go and find that scenario for you. It also can collaborate with you in generation. You could design some things in 3D, it could simulate some things in 3D, or you could use AI to generate something in 3D. Let's take a look at how this is all gonna work. We have a great partnership with Siemens. Siemens is the world's largest industrial engineering and operations platform. You've seen now so many different companies in the industrial space. Heavy industries is one of the greatest final frontiers of IT. And we finally now have the necessary technology to go and make a real impact. Siemens is building the industrial metaverse. And today we're announcing that Siemens is connecting their crown jewel accelerator to NVIDIA Omniverse. Let's take a look.
Siemens technologies transform the everyday for everyone. Teamcenter X, our leading product lifecycle management software from the Siemens Accelerator platform, is used every day by our customers to develop and deliver products at scale. Now we are bringing the real and the digital worlds even closer by integrating NVIDIA AI and Omniverse technologies into Teamcenter X. Omniverse APIs enable data interoperability and physics-based rendering to industrial-scale design and manufacturing projects. Our customers, HD Hyundai,
Don't use this accent around robots.
Hydrogen powered ships, often comprising over 7 million discrete parts. With Omniverse APIs, Teamcenter X lets companies like HD Hyundai unify and visualize
I'll be back.
Interactively. And integrate generative AI to generate 3D objects or HDRI backgrounds to see their projects in context.
Projects.
The result? An ultra-intuitive, photoreal,
physics-based
digital twin that eliminates waste and errors, delivering huge savings in cost and time.
Huge.
And we are building this for collaboration, whether across more Siemens accelerator tools like Siemens NX or Star CCM Plus, or across teams working on their favorite devices in the same scene together. And this is just the beginning. Working with NVIDIA, we will bring accelerated computing, generative AI, and Omniverse integration across the Siemens Accelerator portfolio.
The professional voice actor happens to be a good friend of mine, Roland Busch, who happens to be the CEO of Siemens.
Good. Thank you.
Once you get Omniverse connected into your workflow, your ecosystem, from the beginning of your design to engineering to manufacturing planning, all the way to digital twin operations, once you connect everything together, it's insane how much productivity you can get. And it's just really, really wonderful. All of a sudden, everybody's operating on the same ground truth. You don't have to exchange data and convert data, make mistakes.
If it's generated, is it ground truth?
Right.
The design department,
that's the issue, sir.
The architecture department, all the way to the engineering and even the marketing department. Let's take a look at how Nissan has integrated Omniverse into their workflow. And it's all because it's connected by all these wonderful tools and these developers that we're working with. Take a look.
So we're seeing vehicles, we're seeing purses, and
nice design. This is the best example of design we've seen.
Interesting. So talking to an AI to have a certain color or other design change and having it do that.
So in any language.
In any language, yeah. Good point. Rendering an environment based on a description. Show me a vehicle that can go anywhere. Add on the Explorer pack. So that is obviously trained. And once again, we see the Apple Vision Pro. But that was obviously trained specifically to what Nissan has for it to know what the Explorer right. pack was. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to more contextual generative AI. Because right yes. now, it's just not contextual enough.
I like that car. I wonder what it is.
That was not an animation. That was Omniverse. Today, we're announcing that Omniverse Cloud streams to the Vision Pro. And
so Omniverse Cloud comes to the Apple Vision Pro, so you could walk around in a physical space and see your...
It is very, very strange
in real life
that you walk around virtual doors
and blame
when
everything
I was getting out of that
twin.
Car.
Exactly, it's my
and
evil twin. Goes,
why did you
my
do
fault.
That?
It's really, really quite amazing. Vision Pro connected to Omniverse portals you into Omniverse, and because all of these CAD tools and all these different design tools are now integrated and connected to Omniverse, you can have this type of workflow. Really incredible. Let's talk about robotics. Everything that moves will be robotic. There's no question about that. It's safer. It's more convenient. And one of the largest industries is going
to be automotive.
Everything
that moves will be robot.
We built the robotic stack from top to bottom, as I was mentioned, from the computer system, but in the case of self-driving cars, including the self-driving car application.
Exercise for me?
At the end of this year, or I guess beginning of next year, we will be shipping in Mercedes, and then shortly after that, JLR.
Interesting.
And so these autonomous robotic systems are software-defined. They take a lot of work to do, has computer vision, has obviously artificial intelligence, control and planning, all kinds of very complicated technology, and takes years to refine. We're building the entire stack. However, we open up our entire stack for all of the automotive industry. This is just the way we work. The way we work in every single industry, we try to build as much of it as we can so that we understand it, but then we open it up so that everybody can access it. Whether you would like to buy just our computer, which is the world's only full, functional, safe ASIL-D system that can run AI, this functional, safe ASIL-D quality computer, or the operating system on top, or, of course, our data centers, which is in basically every AV company in the world. However you would like to enjoy it, we're delighted by it. Today we're announcing that BYD, the world's largest EV company, is adopting our
Elon.
Next generation. It's called Thor. Thor is designed for transformer engines. Thor, our next generation AV computer, will be used by BYD.
Thor.
You probably don't know this fact, that we have over 1 million robotics developers. We created Jetson, this robotics computer. We're so proud of it. The amount of software that goes on top of it is insane. But the reason why we can do it at all is because it's 100% CUDA compatible. Everything that we do in our company is in service of our developers. And by us being able to maintain this rich ecosystem and make it compatible with everything that you access from us, we can bring all of that incredible capability to this little tiny computer we call Jetson, a robotics computer. We also today are announcing this incredibly advanced new SDK. We call it Isaac Perceptor. Isaac Perceptor, most of the robots today are pre-programmed. They're either following rails on the ground, digital rails, or they'd be following April tags. But in the future, they're going to have perception. And the reason why you want that is so that you could easily program it. You say, I would you like to go from point A to point B, and it will figure out a way to navigate its way there. So by only programming waypoints, the entire route could be adaptive. The entire environment could be reprogrammed, just as I showed you at the very beginning with the warehouse. You can't do that with pre-programmed AGVs. If those boxes fall down, they just all gum up and they just wait there for somebody to come clear it. And so now, with the Isaac Perceptor, we have incredible state-of-the-art vision odometry, 3D reconstruction, and in addition to 3D reconstruction, depth perception. The reason for that is so that you can have two modalities to keep an eye on what's happening in the world.
So like an advanced
Isaac
robotic vacuum.
Perceptor. The most
because a lot of them are able to see stuff and move around.
Yeah, yeah.
Manufacturing arms, and they are also pre-programmed. The computer vision algorithms, the AI algorithms, the control and path planning algorithms that are geometry aware, incredibly.
This is where virtual worlds make sense to me.
We
to make the world make sense to the machine.
Yeah,
not so much to
we
us.
Exactly, that's CUDA accelerated yeah. motion
Perfectly
planner
put.
That is geometry aware. You put something.
There's
in
one
front
of these
it,
at
it comes up
an
with a new
airport,
plan,
and it makes coffee. And it takes about five times as long to make a cup of coffee as it does for a human to do it at the Starbucks that's next door. And I wonder about, you know, the practicality of that.
Yeah, it's the pedantry of motion.
Wow, you and those phrases, I swear, they're so good.
Are now available.
The pedantry of motion.
And they also just run on NVIDIA's computers. We are starting to do some really great work in the next generation of robotics. The next generation of robotics will likely be a humanoid robotics. We now have the necessary technology, and as I was describing earlier, the necessary technology to imagine generalized human robotics. In a way, human robotics is likely
the longest
easier.
Sermon and the biggest super church I've ever seen.
Imitation.
And you're so right about it being a, hey, look, because we are, you may be getting all excited about this stuff, but we're the reason that it all exists kind of thing they're trying to suggest.
In our world, because we created the world to be something that we can interoperate in.
And they're almost putting their flag into future changes that are coming down the pipeline, too, to say, yeah, that robot, that's us.
And so you want our chips, then use our stuff.
Much more productive to deploy. While we're creating, just like we're doing with the others, the entire stack. Starting from the top, a foundation model that learns from watching video, human examples.
Hopefully it's not watching America's Funniest Home Videos, because then it'll just learn how to fall a lot.
How to fall, yeah.
Gymport called Isaac Reinforcement Learning Gym, which allows the humanoid robot to learn how to adapt to the physical world. And then an incredible computer, the same computer that's going to go into a robotic car, this computer will run inside a humanoid robot called Thor. It's designed for transformer engines. We've combined several of these into one video. This is something that you're going to really love. Take a look.
Don't tell me how I feel.
It's not enough for humans to imagine. We have to invent and explore and push beyond what's been done.
A fair amount of detail.
The video we're watching is showing different clips of robotics.
We push it to fail.
An arm squeezing mustard, picking up mustard and squeezing mustard. An arm avoiding obstacles.
Then help it teach itself. We broaden its understanding.
Wow. A simulation of an arm doing some
take on new
tricks with a pencil.
With absolute precision and succeed.
One of those weird robot dogs climbing stuff.
We make it perceive and move and even reason so it can
reason.
Share our world.
Yeah, they keep pushing that.
Yeah.
Not yet. I'm just kind of assuming that's the case. Find reason.
Sorting tomatoes? What was that?
This is where inspiration leads us. The next frontier.
They're showing a robot that's kind of mimicking
this
a human
Project
behavior.
Groot.
Project Groot, it's called.
A general purpose foundation model for humanoid robot learning.
Oh,
the Groot
dancing
model
with
takes
a robot.
Multimodal instructions and past interactions as input. And produces the next action for the robot.
I could ask a robot to the prom. I would have had better luck.
He developed Isaac Lab, a robot.
If you wrote it in binary, at least your invitation.
Isaac Sim. And we scale out with Osmo, a new compute orchestration service that coordinates workflows across DGX systems for training and OVX systems for simulation. With these tools, we can train Groot in physically based simulation and transfer zero shot to the real world. The Groot model will enable a robot to learn from a handful of human demonstrations so it can help with everyday tasks.
Wow, so they teleoperate it first and then let the robot use that training to actually do the activity.
This is made possible with NVIDIA's technologies that can understand humans from videos, train models and simulation.
So mimicry from demonstration
directly to physical robots. Connecting Groot to a large language model even
when you
allows
extract
it to generate
every
motion
function that a brain or a body does so that it could be mimicked.
Hi, Joanne.
That's,
give me
that's
a
lot of work.
Yeah.
Hey, let's high five.
Can you give us some cool moves?
Sure.
Are we all going to have to train our own robots if we want to use them?
All this incredible
this
intelligence
is how norms
is
will be set in the future.
They'll
come prepackaged with them.
Designed for Groot. Built for the
future. And then you could probably get little add-ons, the dance package or something like that.
The building blocks for the next generation of AI-powered robotics.
the barista package. You'd pay like a monthly subscription for yeah. a robot that'll make you coffee at home. Now they're bringing what appear to be actual... No, that's just on the screen, I think. Robots they're showing.
But could be worse what Elon did with a dancing human.
Oh my, yeah.
The soul of NVIDIA. The intersection of computer graphics, physics, artificial intelligence. It all came to bear at this moment. The name of that project, General Robotics 003.
Groot.
I know. Super good. Super good.
So how did that become Groot?
Well, I think we have some special guests.
Oh, three. Three is in team.
Three?
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Okay, these look like Star Wars robots. Little Star Wars droids.
So I understand you guys are powered by Jetson. They're powered by Jetsons.
These are actually coming out on stage as opposed to the other robotic robots that are just
cute.
They are cute. Oh, they're speaking.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Orange, and this is the famous Green. They are the BDX robots of Disney.
Uh-huh.
Amazing Disney research.
But they're being teleoperated.
Come on, you guys, let's wrap up. Let's go. Five things. Where are you going?
Maybe they're not being teleoperated.
I sit right here.
Or they did that on purpose to make us think they weren't teleoperating.
Here we go. What are you saying?
Oh, the green one's stubborn.
It's not time to eat. It's not time to eat. I'll give you a snack in a moment. Let me finish up real quick. Come on, Green, hurry up.
Is it coming? Please tell me it's coming.
Wasting time. Five things. Five things. First, a new industrial revolution. Every data center should be accelerated. $1 trillion worth of installed data centers will become modernized over the next several years. Second, because of the computational capability we brought to bear, a new way of doing software has emerged.
This is Generative 5 years, AI, is the claim.
Which is going to create new infrastructure dedicated to doing one thing and one thing only. Not for multi-user data centers, but AI generators. These AI generation will create incredibly valuable software. A new industrial revolution. Second, the computer of this revolution, the computer of this generation, generative AI, trillion parameters, Blackwell, insane amounts of computers and computing. Third, I'm trying to concentrate.
Yeah, the robot is making noise. Right.
Good job. Oh. Third, new computer.
It is behaving.
New computer creates,
you know,
new types of software.
Rather realistically, I guess.
It should be distributed in a new way. So
define
that
real.
Yeah, exactly.
An endpoint in the cloud.
It reminds me of my dog. That's
but
what I'll
still
say.
Allow you to take it with you because it is your intelligence. Your intelligence should be packaged up in a way that allows you to take it with you. We call them NIMs. And third, these NIMs are going to help you create a new type of application for the future. Not one that you wrote completely from scratch, but you're going to integrate them like Teams. Create these applications. We have a fantastic capability between NIMS, the AI technology, the tools, NeMo, and the infrastructure DGX Cloud in our AI Foundry to help you create proprietary applications, proprietary chatbots. And then lastly, everything that moves in the future will be robotic. You're not going to be the only one. And these robotic systems, whether they are humanoid, AMRs, self-driving cars, forklifts, manipulating arms, they will all need one thing. Giant stadiums, warehouses, factories. There can be factories that are robotic, orchestrating factories, manufacturing lines that are robotics, building cars that are robotics. These systems all need one thing. They need a platform, a digital platform, a digital twin platform, and we call that Omniverse, the operating system of the robotics world. These are the five things that we talked about today. What does NVIDIA look like? What does NVIDIA look like? When we talk about GPUs, there's a very different image that I have when I when people ask me about GPUs. First, I see a bunch of software stacks and things like that. And second, I see this. This is what we announced to you today. This is Blackwell. This is the platform.
You didn't have to do the Bush
amazing,
clap.
Amazing processors, NVLink switches, networking systems, and the system design is a miracle. This is Blackwell. And this, to me, is what a GPU looks like in my mind. Listen, orange, green, I think we have one more treat for everybody. Oh, what do you think? Should we?
We're now over 2 hours. Exactly.
We have one more thing to show you. Roll it.
Will those robots actually get off stage? They're going to end up staying there. Oh, good. They are moving.
Now the universe.
We've created a digital twin of Mars.
Oh, this is dorky. So the alien typing is if aliens had fingers in the spaceship. It says, show me NVIDIA.
And the Neva platform. Oh, it's so little. It just came out inside of one of these Blackwell platform towers, and it's a tiny, tiny, tiny little ship flying over the different things we've seen today. The Blackwell GPUs, that Grace CPU, as well as probably the NVLink switch chip.
I think I was sleeping. What's a DPU? I missed that one.
I don't know what a DPU is either. Digital.
I don't know. Something wrong.
There's the NVLink switch chip.
There's the switch.
The spine, which of course has all of the wires to save on electricity. Oh, it's an amphibious ship.
Water, it's water because it's water cooled, so it's got to go through the water. Oh, there's a leak.
Don't worry, they're on it. Ah! There was a little person inside of the ship. I suppose it was supposed to look like CEO. So yeah, that was just a little overview of what we saw.
Thank you. Have a great GTC. Thank you all for coming.
I wonder whether he had a single sip of water.
Thank you.
He just simulated the water.
I mean, he did do pretty well considering that he did the whole show himself.
Yeah. Did the whole show himself. That's 2 hours of almost consistent and constant communication paired with no rehearsal, allegedly.
or very little, not enough.
Yeah, not enough rehearsal. I think an impressive job. This has been...
So what do you think, Michael?
Yeah, the NVIDIA GTC keynote. I think you nailed it at the beginning whenever you suggested that this was an opportunity for NVIDIA to say, we've seen how y'all out there getting very excited about what OpenAI is doing, what Microsoft is doing, what Google's doing, what all of these companies are doing. But don't forget, we're the behind the scenes folks that are helping make all of that possible. At the same, you know, because this technology that is going to power the next set of whatever happens in AI, we may not have heard about otherwise, because those companies are buying it and then building the tools that we actually use on top of it. And that's the stuff that we as consumers see. So I think you're dead on in what this was meant to be. Outside of the weird math and jargon that was used a lot of the time, where that did not feel very much for us.
No, it was not at all. We were strangers in a strange land.
but I don't know. I appreciated seeing some of the technology in the sense that it, you know, I've heard about digital twins before on the Microsoft Azure side, and not really conceptualizing what that meant outside of some just simulation to go, oh, if I was to build a factory here, what would that look like? This actually being the place where you're training these robots is a really cool idea. I think that makes sense. And then just overall, again, me as a person who has to talk about this stuff regularly, knowing some of the behind the scenes, knowing the spine, if we want to use one of the terms from the conference, is very helpful. I'm curious your thoughts in particular. You can mention or remind the listeners that the conversation that we had briefly about how the CEO of NVIDIA kind of said this brings the end of the computer scientist to the forefront. What do you think about that?
So Huang said on some stage somewhere, I can't remember what it was, there's a video up online that just says that we don't need to train computer scientists anymore. Probably overstated. But instead, what matters is domain expertise. That if you're a doctor, that expertise is what matters. And that the machine, you can talk to the machine, and that's what is miraculous about AI. So it brings it to our level, which I think is real and is true. And I talk a lot about wanting to start a new program in internet studies, or call it internet and AI, or technology humanities. We've got to bring the humanities back into this. It's about humanity and how we interact with this. It's less about the technology. One thing I learned, and pardon me, I'm going to do a plug here in the Gutenberg parenthesis. Yeah, I haven't got it once this show. There it is. Is that after some time, the technologists and the technology fade into the scenery. Mm-hmm. What matters is what we do with it. Mm. That was 150 years for print before we got the novel and the essay and newspaper. And I think it's going to happen here too, where both on the internet and in AI, yeah, of course we're going to need the technologists. You and I can't build this stuff.
Right.
And they're there. But what matters is what we do with it. And I think that's what he was really saying. Is that here's an incredible tool set, and it's up to you what you do with it.
Go forth and create. That's why I welcome
that attitude.
And right? Do you think that this will happen at a more rapid pace than that 150 years? Or do you think it'll still take a long time?
I think it's still taking a long time. Mm-hmm. And this is what people argue with me about. Because I say that I think we have time. I think we still don't know what the internet is. We still don't know what AI is. We're seeing the future and the analog of the past. We haven't really reinvented things yet. If you look online, shows look like shows, and books look like books, and newspapers like newspapers. And I think it takes some time to reinvent this. Now, what he was trying to argue basically is we aren't going to generate that. His machines will. Yeah. I don't know about that. That bothers me. What struck me more than anything else, Micah, is scale. I have been arguing that the internet, the connected world, scales to such an extent that small matters now. That because everyone can connect to everyone, then small groups and small communities can find each other and do things. And I very much believe that.
Yeah.
And so scale matters to the extent that it makes small possible, big enough possible, big enough. So, that's my cant that I'm using in the next book, The Web We Weave, out this fall from Basic Books. But here, the constant, I don't want to say drumbeat, the constant kind of jet noise of scale was somewhat overwhelming to me. Mm-hmm. We made it this big, and now it's N times that big, and it's 1,000 times that big, and it's faster and faster and faster. And I made reference earlier to the Stochastic Parents paper written by Timnit Gebru and Margaret Mitchell and Emily Bender and the fourth person I forget. And they complained at the time, a couple of years ago, that this rush to make ever bigger models is a mistake because it can't be audited, it can't be tracked and traced, and it's kind of macho. Mm-hmm. And we go to smaller models. And if you listen to Jan LeCun at Meta, he talks about smaller models. He talks about different ways to learn, imagining it's a three-year-old learning language or learning movement. And so I think that brings it back into a human scale of conception, whereas today it blew all that apart. It's just, my God, it is bigger upon bigger upon bigger upon bigger. And that's what he wants as a business.
Right. Yes. It's very what capitalistically minded in the background, even if it's not just ego, just that idea of, yes, a company who makes its money by selling these is obviously going to try to imagine doing more and more and more and getting you to invest in more and more and more.
Right. The last thing that strikes me is the relationship with his customers. Somewhat befuddles me.
Yeah.
You know, he brags about the advances of Transformer, but he gives no credit to Google for that. He talks about the digital double. What do you call it?
The digital twin.
Thank you, twin. Close. And as you pointed out many times, that's kind of Microsoft's phrase. And yes, he mentions the customers. And yes, he mentions what they're doing. But he also is competing with them in creating models.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand the business well enough to get the full dynamics of that. I got to think there's some trouble here that they think at NVIDIA, you all need us, but Google makes its own chips too. Apple makes its own chips too. I don't know that, and there's other competitors out there, and NVIDIA is doing, Lord knows, it's doing extremely well. It's amazing. But at what point does hubris tear them down?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm still very confused about it as well. What specifically in that area? I went to some of the pages that were mentioned, the ai.nvidia.com, to learn more about the NIMS in particular, which was that thing they were talking about with their own AI models. But what's interesting is all of the models that they are, I'm going to use a strange verb here, nimming, are actually models from other companies. So it's Stability AI's SDXL Turbo. It's Google's Gemma 7B. It's Meta's Llama 2 that you're actually interacting with. It's Stability's AI, Stability Video Diffusion. So it's almost as if what NVIDIA is providing is the platform on which to sit some of these open models, maybe, as opposed to being them creating models of their own. So that may have just been because, again, we talked about how it was all kind of what couched in jargon. It may have been a misunderstanding.
I don't know. I don't understand that. Because it sounded to me at one point that he was talking about them making their own models.
Right.
And so I don't understand it well enough to know what's going on and kind of what their market position is versus others. And, you know, finally, it's amazing, too, to think about the world used to be owned by Intel and Intel inside, and now it's NVIDIA inside everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they want to remind us of that. I think that's what today was about. You saw all of the companies mentioned, SAP being one that, as NVIDIA pointed out themselves, runs a lot of the stuff behind the scenes at NVIDIA, too. That's a company that has deep roots in so much. So learning that, you know, they're using NVIDIA in many ways. There were some different kind of terms, verb phrases that were used that's still very confusing to me. And I plan to kind of learn more about what it means, particularly early on when they were talking about being able to, oh goodness, I'm forgetting what the terminology was, but essentially a company could accelerate their compute by working with NVIDIA in these specific ways. And it wasn't quite clear what that meant and what it meant to go forth with what NVIDIA was providing. Yeah. So there was a lot of kind of
CUDA accelerate.
Yeah. That's it. CUDA accelerate.
Accelerate. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So what that actually means in practice was not made clear, I feel, other than we'll make your compute even more compute-y. That was kind of the extent of it. So
just to say compute as a noun, always, it's like I hate using gift as a verb.
Yeah.
It's give, not gift. It's give, right? And so now that compute becomes a noun, how much compute you have, I understand it's shorter than saying computer power or something else.
The amount of compute in a thing, yeah.
But it's very, to me, it's a very recently popular phrase. I'm sure they've been using it in computer science for a long time. But now that AI comes, it's out there in language.
Yeah, that's just not clear, right? At least in the sense of everything else that this presentation, this two-hour presentation provided, there were times where I genuinely did feel a little lost by what was being said.
I fully admit it.
Yeah,
I was the wrong person to have here, except that I'm interested in this, but that's it.
That's what we both do. We're enthusiasts,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Omniverse, accelerated computing, guardrail it.
Oh, the
AI foundry. Everything that moves will be robotic. Those were some of the other phrases that I wrote down that struck me. And then, of course, the embarrassing moment, which I tweeted about, is when he said to Grace Hopper, "Good girl."
Oof.
That was oof, oof.
Yeah, that was a bad moment there.
It was,
and you know, I'm sure that will that will play out too. Interestingly, in many cases, there are still the Hopper CPU is still a part of this new GPU architecture, mm-hmm. despite the upgrades to the Blackwell GPUs. A lot of that technology is kind of being updated in componentized areas. And ultimately, I remain curious at what companies can even afford some of the stuff that they were showing off today, because wow.
That goes back to scale.
Yeah.
Right? I want to believe that open source models and AI brought down to the level of researchers and schools and startups will do amazing things. And I believe that will be the case. But there's this pressure for huge.
Mm-hmm. Here.
And, you know, you see these pictures of them multiplying servers upon racks upon racks upon things, and they can all talk to each other, and that's fine. And he's saying, you got to fill it with data then. And that creates an omnivorous, speaking of omni, hunger for data that's going to freak people out.
Yes, it will.
Data has become a bad word. And I think that's a problem, because data is knowledge at some point. But they're going to try to hoover up everything they possibly can. And the problem remains that what is available from those who had the power to publish and the power to create in the past. That is what makes these systems biased. And what we really should be talking about is what we add to them, what's missing from them, not to feed their omnivorous, omniverses, but instead to find more diversity and value in how we present the world.
Yeah, perhaps
to these machines.
Perhaps this is where it is a good opportunity. What we hear about what's upcoming and sort of what's underway right now. We just heard from OpenAI that they're training on publicly available video, and I think mm-hmm. about all of the everyday people who that was kind of their first foray into online publishing, and how maybe that will better capture the zeitgeist, perhaps, you know, TikTok publishing and YouTube videos right, and right, all of that, right. Perhaps is a better representation of the state of the everyday person versus what I think you're saying, which is that, you know, traditionally it's been things from the New York Times, which the New York Times has problems with, and all of those right. publications that exist on the web that have hold and, you know, form a large archive of what the internet is. Yeah, maybe this is going to make things a little bit more even in terms of where the
information is coming from. Do that intentionally.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah,
right. And
make that choice
exactly. And recognize what's not there and say, we've got to go for it. If you listen to Wikipedia, they do that regularly. They say, we have a bunch of mainly white male, I think it's heavily male, Wikipedians who work their butts off and do amazing things.
They do great things, yeah.
But they recognize that because some people are missing from the core of Wikipedians, some things are missing in Wikipedia. And they have to intentionally go out and encourage other people to do this. And I think the same, you know, when we have this talk about generative AI and learning training sets, and how the New York Times says, take our stuff down, all the publishers take our stuff down and put up paywalls for the machine. Well, what's the world we're presenting to the AI that's going to be out there making decisions, oftentimes that they shouldn't make?
Yeah. But will be
on a skewed view of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so the responsibility to me that we don't talk about is what we have to add into all that. And that's, again, goes back to stochastic parents. If you're dealing with smaller models, you can audit them. You can see what's there and you can see what's missing. You get to the scale that he was talking about today.
There's no, you have to build AI to even come close to doing the task of auditing, and then it still doesn't give you, the human being, the full understanding of how.
And there's no reasoning, and there's no judgment, and there's no sense of fact, and there's no sense of meaning.
Yeah,
there was there are other jumps here. He didn't talk about AGI per se. He did talk about one of the scales here was to learn and understand everything, and the first comes pattern, and then meeting, and then generation, and that's kind of the sequence that they have here. Well, there's a few things missing in there. Do you really understand meaning, machine? No, you don't. There isn't a sense of meaning. And so when you generate from something that doesn't have meaning. That's what generative AI does.
Right.
It doesn't have meaning. And because it sounds like us, we think it does. But as Emily Bender points out, we impute the meaning in what it produces. It has no sense of meaning. And so this entire industry thinks that it can find meaning, and it can't.
Huh.
And so if they'd slow down and fill in their gaps as well in the functionality, but instead they're just go blasting ahead with scale.
So do you think that it's even, is it possible for it to, what, is it possible for it to actually have that meaning, first and foremost? Secondarily, how do you determine that it does have meaning? And then I guess thirdly, it's almost a bit, Schrodinger's cat situation where, like, by the observation of us as human beings to provide that meaning to it, that's what gives it the meaning. So then what is another, can it even be possible for it to have meaning if we don't ascribe meaning to it by giving it meaning? Wow. Yeah.
This is what fascinates me about all this. And what I like about this field is because it forces us to ask questions of ourselves as humans.
Mm, mm-hmm.
We call it artificial intelligence. Well, what is intelligence? The New York Times starts to believe that AI has a self, which I know it doesn't have, but okay. What is a self? How would we know if it had it? Would we know if it has a sense of meaning? What's the test for that? The other part that always interests me is how these people make, and I didn't hear this today, mm-hmm. but you hear it from the AI people, the AGI people, is the goal is to be human, is to duplicate a human function. I don't know that's the right scale for compute. I don't know that's the right judgment of its power and its ability. And so does it have to have a self? No, it doesn't. Can it do the things we want it to do? That's the real test here.
Right.
And we saw a little bit of that at the very end today where, oh, look, here's a neat car. We can design. We can show you stuff. But it's got to be done in the context of our desires. Damn it. We're in charge.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. It's this idea that we're pushing for it to be human for what purpose exactly?
Yes.
When really all we want is a tool that can do the things that we need it to do in a new, you know, conception. It is, I guess that's a little egotistical, huh?
Exactly.
That
yes.
Human
exactly
is what it needs to be because that's the best thing it could be.
Right. But it could be in some ways immensely more, but in other ways immensely less.
Yeah.
You're right. It's egotistical in two ways. One, that we become the basis of judgment. If you're as smart as us, then
you've done it.
Arrived.
Yeah.
However, the next piece is, if I'm the one who makes that machine that makes it smarter than us, then look how smart I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's ego squared.
Wow.
That's why this is a fun field to talk about. And this is what, you know, this is how I blather too with our friend Jason Howell on AIinside.show every Wednesday.
Head there.
Before a twig. And, you know, we admit, today, we don't know what half of what he was talking about.
Right.
But it still affects us. And so we still can have a seat at this table to discuss it.
And we need to. We
have to.
Yeah. Yes. Because as you said, exactly, we are not the people. We need those people to create the stuff, but they're creating all of this stuff for the impact that it has on us and the tools that we will eventually have at our disposal. And so understanding as much of it early on, being aware of it, and then I think more importantly, helping to give other people the understanding such that we're all able to make informative decisions and informative opinions about it is all very important, because you're right. This is foot on the gas in so many ways. And when you just develop a base fear or misunderstanding of a thing that results in you being avoidant and sort of, oh, that's over there and I'm not going to pay any attention to it. And then suddenly it smacks you in the face. No, we need more engagement. We need people to be aware of it so that we're all part of how this goes forward, especially if this is the next industrial revolution. This is the next new thing. It's got to be informed by everyone, not just the people with the, you know, the CS degrees.
Amen to that. Exactly that. That's why I like Huang saying we can stop training CS people and start caring about domain expertise. That goes to my heart. That's right. And he says that we can do that because the machine can listen and talk to us. I think that's correct. It can't get things right, but we can use our own language to command it, and that puts us back in charge. And I felt today a little loss of that power that he gave me only 2 weeks ago in that talk, but I think we can get it back.
Yeah. Well, this was a really good conversation. I appreciate you being here, Jeff Jarvis, to join me in talking about NVIDIA's GTC keynote. If folks want to check out your other work, where should they go to do that?
GutenbergParenthesis.com with a discount code for Gutenberg and my other book magazine. Thank you very much for the plug opportunity.
You're very welcome. You can find me all this week on many a show as Leo Laporte is on vacation. So tune in all throughout the week for tomorrow. It will be Security Now, Wednesday, Windows Weekly, and Thursday we'll be doing...
Wait, you left one out.
Oh my gosh, Twig is also on. Yes, Twig as well. Geez. I'm so sorry.
What are we,
so
chopped liver?
No, you're not chopped liver. I'm so sorry. I was thinking because there's a special event on Thursday morning.
I'm done with Jarvis now. I can forget him for the week. Oh no, more of him.
We will be on Twig. I'm very much looking forward to it, actually. The last time I was on Twig, I had a very, very good time, and that was a really re-energizing moment, so I appreciate that. Thursday morning, we will be doing a news event for Microsoft. They're talking about AI, and then, of course, Tech News Weekly on Thursday as well. So yeah, tune in this week if you want to hear more of me, and thank you all for tuning in to this event, NVIDIA GTC 2024. I'll catch you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.